May it please the court. Mr. Hernandez presented two issues in his briefing. I would like to focus on the second issue, and specifically the procedural reasonableness of the sentence with respect to the 5K 2.0 departure. The guidelines outside of departures through enhancements provide several ways to hold Mr. Hernandez responsible for the unfortunate events that took place in Mexico with the firearms about which he made false statements. And some of these were discussed at sentencing. First, there is the relevant conduct guideline 1B1.3. The government specifically mentioned relevant conduct, but the government, in order to use the relevant conduct guideline, would have to show that the murders that took place were part of the jointly undertaken criminal activity and that these events were reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Hernandez. They could not make this showing. They did not specifically request that the events in Mexico be considered relevant conduct. Instead, they requested a departure under 5K 2.0. The other possibility for holding Mr. Hernandez responsible for the events in Mexico is the cross-reference to the homicide guideline 2A. And again, that has a mens rea requirement that the government could not meet. The district court expressly said this was not a murder case. It was not considering Mr. Hernandez to be knowledgeable about the murders. Then there's a third way that Mr. Hernandez could have been held responsible through guideline enhancements, and that's under 2K2.1B6, which is the enhancement for firearm possession in connection with another felony offense. But that enhancement requires knowledge, intent, or reason to believe that the felony would be committed in connection with.
What do you hear arguing that Blakely's explication of Apprendi, as I take it, that the judge found facts that were not agreed upon, or the defendant didn't admit, and those judge found facts are necessary to support the sentence that was given. Or implicit in that is that you cannot reasonably infer from the admitted facts those facts which he ultimately found. Is that basically what you're arguing?
Yes, Your Honor, that's...
looking at this, you've got a case down on the border and a man dealing in guns. And he's selling these. Why is it a reasonable inference that those guns are going across the border, given the fact that everybody walking around reading newspapers knows there's a war right across the border and they're using all kinds of automatic weapons, et cetera? And then war is not an understatement. I mean, that is a connection or a disconnect, I think, that you have to address in your argument. You agree?
I agree, and I'd be glad to address that.
Well, focus on that if you would.
Okay, I'd be glad to do that. I think it's important to note the timing of these events. And now in 2010, there have been news articles upon news articles about the war, and I agree with you, it's not an overstatement to call it that, south of the border. These events took place not in 2010, but in 2006 and 2007. And there's also a gap in between. There's a gap about what we know Mr. Hernandez was involved in, and we know the end result several months later, and in some cases over a year later, in Mexico. What we're missing in the record is the causal chain, what happened. We know Mr. Hernandez sold the guns, not on the border, but to some other individual in Houston. He is in Houston, he sells the guns, he acquires them in Houston, and he sells them in Houston. We don't know how they got to Mexico. It's not even clear that Mr. Hernandez knew that all of the guns would be going to Mexico. One witness he told, according to the PSR, he told a witness that they'd be going out of state. Certainly Mexico is not the only market for guns. There are states with more restrictive gun laws all over the country where those guns would sell. He told another witness that the guns were going to Mexico. So it's not clear that he knew that all of the guns were going to Mexico, much less they would wind up in the hands of a drug trafficking cartel. There's
Didn't
just no.
Did he mention the drug trafficking cartel by name at one point?
He did mention the name of the Zetas, which are the enforcers for the drug trafficking cartel. But without more information about what the conversation was, we're talking about the Zetas right now. That, I mean, we need more information. Who, what was he speaking about? Was he talking about that he had just discovered this existed? Is he talking about something he read in the paper? It's there's not enough information from which to draw a reliable conclusion. There's not, I'm not even sure that we know the timing of that statement. But I wanted to speak a little bit more about the inferences that can and cannot be drawn. We're missing a key piece of information about what happened, in some cases, for a year to those guns. How many hands did they go through? Were they stolen? They didn't all wind up in the same place. There are some in Guatemala. There's no indication anyone had any idea they were going to Guatemala. And there's testimony in the preliminary hearing, which was made part of the sentencing record. It was in Sentencing Exhibit 3, from the case agent agreeing that Mr. Hernandez did not know. There was no evidence indicating he knew that they would be used in that way. That's the only evidence we have. So I think it's speculative at best to conclude that he knew they would be used for nefarious purposes.
What was the objection made at trial?
There was an objection to any departure.
I'm sorry?
There was an objection to the departure, both to the extent and the reasons provided for it, as well as...
But what was it articulated in the present terms, that is, under Apprendi, as read by Blakely, Your Honor, those facts would have to be found by a jury?
Yes. As to the departure.
He did articulate that.
Yes, as to the departure. Not at the conclusion of the sentence, but during the course of sentencing, there was a specific reference to the Sixth Amendment issue. But there's just not enough information to conclude. The government makes a lot of argument that he had to have known, he should have known, there's only one place these guns could have gone. But that's argument, that's not evidence. And there's really no evidence that there is only one place those guns could have gone, and that that place was where these unfortunate murders occurred. And I think it's also worth noting that there's just no information about how the guns would be used in the record. There's not even an indication of a nefarious purpose beyond the guns being possessed by someone who wasn't allowed to have them. The serial numbers weren't filed off. There was no sort of discussion. There's nothing in the record about what they might be used for or where they might go, other than out of state and then to somebody else, to Mexico, to be resold.
Among the facts that Mr. Hernandez admitted to were that of the 23 military-type weapons purchased, five of them were appeared in Mexico. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
So we do have in the admitted facts a linkage between the sales and that he was involved, albeit Houston, that five of them he knew ended up in Mexico.
But when did he know that? It's clear that...
I understand, but he is admitting that... I assumed he knew it at some point in time. Well, let me turn that question back. What did he agree to on the facts? He agreed that five of them ended up in Mexico. Is no time to mention of that at all?
I don't believe that there is a time. I mean, if he knew it after the fact, that really doesn't make it remotely foreseeable.
It didn't occur to me immediately that having stipulated to that, that he would have been agreeing to some post-mortem fact. It didn't matter.
I think a more natural reading would be that there were these military-type weapons, 23 of which wound up in Mexico. I do not dispute that fact. I'm not sure that you can infer from that he knew that ex ante. At least that's not how I read the facts adduced at rearrangement. But I think what's important here is that the government had many means through the guidelines to seek enhancement for Mr. Hernandez based on the terrible events that occurred many months after he purchased the weapons. But the government lacked the requisite proof to do so. 5K 2.0 is not for the situation where the aggravating circumstance has already been taken into account by the guidelines. Clearly, the guidelines have already thought about holding someone responsible for the consequences of their actions down the line. It's just not available in this case, and it's not appropriate to do an end run around 1B1.3, the homicide guideline, and 2K2.1B6 by using 5K2.0. The extraordinary circumstance certainly can't be that government failed to prove enhancements legitimately. That's not what the guideline is meant to be used for.
Are you saying that they have to show that he knew that each and every single one of these guns was going to Mexico? I mean, they would have had to demonstrate that.
If they want to hold him responsible for a murder, they would have to show that he had some idea.
Well, because you said it took a year. You said a year later or whatever, because the prosecutor argued that it was 65 days later that one of the guns he bought turned up at the scene of the kidnapping and murder of a businessman in Mexico, only 65 days later. And you were talking about a year later. And so you've got to help me here.
Sure. There were several events, probably the most serious of which was there was a standoff with the Mexican police. That was 15 months later. But the events, the government listed a series of very sad events that occurred and said that Mr. Hernandez had to have known. But some of them did occur much later. That one is the closest in time, and it's 2 months.
65 days later.
Yes. Yes. But you can't, just because 2 months later something terrible happened does not mean that it's foreseeable. Proximity in time does not necessarily equal foreseeability.
Well, he knew some of the guns were being sent to Mexico.
He did tell somebody that some of the guns were being sent to Mexico, but there's no link.
Well, he doesn't need all of them to be linked to Mexico in order to have had his sentence enhanced for that, does he?
But he's not being enhanced for the sentence. The sentence isn't being enhanced because he knew some guns were going to Mexico. His sentence is being enhanced because they went to a specific cartel, and that he had to have known that. That's what the government argued. But there's no indication that he did have to have known that in 2006 or 2007. It's not remotely foreseeable. There's no indication that he even knew those things.
Not remotely foreseeable? That you know you're sending a large amount of guns and some of them are going to Mexico, and you're aware of the who uses guns in Mexico, even in 2006, and you know who the players are. It's not remotely foreseeable?
No, it's not. If you don't know where those guns are going, how many times they change hands, no, it's not foreseeable.
And the PSR isn't even objected to at all on these theories and these...
Well, there wasn't an objection to the proper enhancements. There was an objection to the speculative nature of the upward departure. That's what I'm challenging. The enhancements I'm not challenging. The government sustained its burden of proof with respect to those. It's because the court has previously rejected the idea that the mere possibility that someone could have known something, they've rejected that possibility is just enough. It's not. The government has to make that nexus between the events, what Mr. Hernandez deliberately involved himself in, what was the jointly undertaken criminal activity. It was not murder. It was obtaining these weapons. And it's not permissible to do an end run around three different guideline sections because the government doesn't have enough proof to sustain those. For all of these reasons, the court should vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing without the upward departure based on 5K2.0.
Let me raise one other question before you sit down. When I suggested to you about the standard we're dealing with, I would suggest to you there's a very powerful argument that's not the law, that's Justice Scalia's view, and that the reasonableness standard is, and in fact, and no other justices have accepted it. While there's a logic in it, it really, there's a very serious problem with that. And I didn't want to leave that unsaid. If you hadn't, you maybe come back in a rebuttal or whatever if you want to address that issue. But I didn't want to mislead you on that.
I'd very much like to address that issue on rebuttal if I could. Thank you.
All right. You've saved time for rebuttal, Ms. Landau. Mr. Berry?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Richard Berry for the United States, Ms. Landau. Let me start by answering Judge Higginbotham's initial question, what did Mr. Hernandez agree to? And if I may, I'll read you one sentence from the rearrangement, page 148 in the record. The prosecutor of the trial, AUSA, was asked to summarize the evidence, and he said, the false statement was material to the sale because the federal firearms dealer would not have sold Mr. Hernandez the weapons if Mr. Hernandez had admitted correctly that he was not the actual buyer. Quoting, the truth about which the defendant intended to deceive the federal firearms license holder was that the defendant bought these firearms on behalf of another person whose purpose was to smuggle them across the border into Mexico. Answering your specific question, and I think several of Judge Elrod's questions, the probable cause and detention hearing, which of course preceded the rearrangement, and the PSR, as to which there was absolutely no objection, and which the district court adopted in toto, set out in painstaking detail the fact that 22 individuals were identified in the Houston area as composing three groups of straw buyers for over 300 weapons, all of which were shipped to Mexico. We don't know that all of them were shipped to Mexico. A number of them have turned up in Mexico. A few have turned up in Guatemala. The linkage, as Judge Higginbotham said, is that one of those three groups of buyers was headed by the son-in-law of Oziel Cardenas. Oziel Cardenas was, until his arrest and return to the United States, the head of the Gulf Cartel. The main proponent of, as Judge Higginbotham aptly described it, the drug war currently being waged along the border. I would respectfully disagree with Ms. Landau as to the timing of the drug war. I think that Judge Head or Judge Kazin and anyone else from Laredo, McAllen, and Brownsville and El Paso could testify that this has been going on the majority of the last decade, possibly back into the 90s. It certainly escalated of late, but it's not a new occurrence. As to what he knew and when he knew it, he mentioned the Zetas, the enforcement wing of the Gulf Cartel, to one of the cooperating witnesses. Paragraph 33 of the PSR sets out in detail six of the seven straw purchasers whom Mr. Hernandez recruited to buy weapons. I note parenthetically that one of the straw purchasers is not included in his 103-gun total because that straw purchaser also purchased weapons for one of the other two groups of straw purchasers, and therefore those 21 are not included in Mr. Hernandez 103 because the probation officer could not determine how many of those 21 should be attributed to Mr. Hernandez alone. The fact that there is a time lag between the purchase and the use in Mexico, I would respectfully submit, is immaterial. The only purpose for buying any of the weapons was to supply the drug war in Mexico. As the ATF agent, Carla Mayfield, testified at the probable cause and detention hearing, ATF surveyed the firearms forms from Houston area gun dealers and identified a number of individuals comprised in three separate groups who purchased approximately, I believe, 323 weapons. Some of them have showed up in, as described in the PSR and as discussed at the sentencing hearing, the murder of police officers in Mexico, the murder of a businessman in Mexico, kidnapping of individuals in Mexico, and an assault on the Mexican National Police at a botanical garden. That's more than adequately cataloged in the PSR, and again, there was no objection to the PSR, and Judge Hittner specifically adopted the PSR at sentencing, so that's all before the court for your consideration. The only real issue is, was the six-level departure reasonable? I would suggest that it was eminently reasonable. A departure to 120 months would have been reasonable, the statutory cap. The six-level departure raised the guideline level from 51 months to 63 months, as to which there is no debate because there was no objection filed by either party in the district court, to 97 to 121 months. Judge Hittner then imposed a sentence of 97 months, the low end of the elevated range. He achieved that by increasing the total offense level from 24 to 30. The six offense level increase is eminently reasonable. It's less than the number of people killed in part as the result of firearms that Mr. Hernandez purchased. It's less than the number of people that Mr. Hernandez recruited to purchase firearms. It's substantially less than the number of firearms Mr. Hernandez himself purchased. It's less than the number of military-type AR-15 or M16, M16A1 commercial replicas that Mr. Hernandez purchased. And frankly, as I said, a sentence of 120 months would have still, the statutory cap would have been eminently reasonable. Finally, as to Judge Higginbotham's closing comment to Ms. Landau, Ms. Landau and the trial prosecutor have done an excellent job of claiming that the specific use of the firearm was not reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Hernandez. That is to say, a particular Bushmaster that he purchased at Academy in Northeast Houston in May 2006 would be used in a shootout with the Mexican National Police 15 months later in Veracruz in 2007. I would certainly concede that's true. That's not the issue. Mr. Hernandez, all the seven individuals that Mr. Hernandez recruited, the 15 other people associated with Mr. Hernandez were doing absolutely nothing other than purchasing guns for the Gulf cartel to wage a war with the government of Mexico, and in one instance, with a competing drug gang in, I believe, Nicaragua. I'm sorry, all of a sudden I've forgotten the other country. The 97-month sentence was eminently reasonable, and it was easily justified by any one of the three bases that Judge Hittner offered. There's Application Note 11 to 2K2.1, which says that an upward departure is encouraged if the offense involves military-style weapons. There's Application Note 13 to Guideline 2K2.1, which says that an upward departure is encouraged if the individual is trafficking in substantially more than 25 weapons. And there's Guideline 5K2.0A2, which says that an upward departure is encouraged under circumstances not adequately taken into consideration in determining the applicable guideline range. I would submit that in arriving at the range of 51 to 63 months, which is the admittedly correct original guideline range, there was no consideration given to the fact that Mr. Hernandez and seven individuals recruited by Mr. Hernandez were purchasing military-type weapons, primarily assault rifles patterned on and largely indistinguishable from the M16, M16A1 used by the United States military, for the sole purpose of providing weapons for the Gulf cartel so that it could further its drug empire. If the court has any question at all, I'd be delighted to field it. Otherwise, I'd be delighted to give you back 11 minutes and 40 seconds.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berry. Ms. Landau, you've saved time for rebuttal.
To make sure that we don't run out of time, I'd like to address Judge Higginbotham's question about the Sixth Amendment first. The reason I didn't address the Sixth Amendment is because I think the easiest way to understand this case is as a misapplication of the guidelines. We need not rely on Judge Scalia in a footnote to get to what's wrong in this case. The district court bypassed what the guidelines offered in terms of holding Mr. Hernandez responsible for these events in Mexico. The government didn't seek these. It didn't cross appeal to say that these enhancements should have been done instead of the departure. Saying that he did these gun purchases for the purpose of presumes that he knew what the intent of the chain was, the supply chain. There's no indication he knew that. And while it may be very obvious to a highly educated federal judge sitting on the border in 2006 or 2007, the same cannot be said of Mr. Hernandez, who is a 24-year-old high school dropout with no significant criminal history. He may not be schooled in the ways of what is going on in Mexico. He could have just as easily seen a way to make easy money by selling guns that were readily available at a sporting goods store. It doesn't take evil intent knowing what the eventual purpose of these guns was to commit this offense. The government has failed to establish the nexus necessary to hold Mr. Hernandez responsible. It's through the reasonableness prong that we get there, through a misapplication of the guidelines. And the other bases cited for the enhancement were not cited alone or as an alternative. It was 2K2.1, application note 11, and 5K2.0. It wasn't one was the alternative. They're taken together, and the district court didn't really tease out how much of the departure was attributable to the nature of the guns and that were trafficked, and how much was to these murders in Mexico. We don't know. The record doesn't reveal it. So it cannot be said that the departure is sustained purely on a proper basis when it clearly resulted from this improper basis, holding Mr. Hernandez responsible for these murders.
You know, the difficulty I have that argument is that it almost brings us back to under the guidelines without the reasonableness requirement in the way that we're going to compartmentalize these things. And it's kind of hard to have your cake and eat it too.
I don't think I'm doing that. I think a misapplication of 5K2.0 is clearly a misapplication of the guidelines, and it's procedural reasonableness error. I mean, in Gutierrez-Hernandez, which was authored by Judge Higginbotham, the court made a very similar analysis. I think this case can be analogized to that. I think we can get lost in the weeds, and that's why I didn't want to spend much time on the Sixth Amendment. Looking at it as a guideline application error is a much clearer cut.
Suggesting that the judge can find the facts that are necessary that determine within the range of reasonableness of guided only by an outer limit of reasonableness of some sort, that and he can find those facts necessary to his sentencing, as long as he doesn't exceed the statutory or jump into another statutory minimum, et cetera.
Right, but Gall and Rita indicate that we have to calculate the guidelines correctly first.
Oh, sure.
And that's what went wrong in this case.
Your argument is solely that they just miscalculated.
It's primarily that it was miscalculated. I think that's a much easier way to understand what happened rather than wading into the thicket of the Sixth Amendment. If the court has no further questions, I'll conclude.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Landau.
Thank you.
Your case and all of today's cases are under submission. The court is in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow.